Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Marriage equality has been a defining civil rights issue, and the LGBT community has just come off a huge victory as attitudes have shifted across the country in the last decade. That led ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision legalizing same-sex marriage across the country. But despite the celebration of this huge achievement, the community still faces a number of vexing challenges. In the coming months, KCUR will explore the LGBTQ community and the issues it faces in Kansas City. Today, we begin the conversation with three people addressing these issues in Kansas and Missouri. They are Michael Lintikum. He's executive director of the Mid-America Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. Michael, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Kirk Eisenhower is the vice president of marketing and development for the Kansas City Care Clinic. Kirk, nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
Stephanie Mott is a transgender woman and executive director of K-STEP, the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project. Stephanie, welcome to you, too.
Thank you so much.
Well, Missouri and Kansas, we just experienced very different executive orders that were signed this week by the governors of our two states. The Missouri order was seen as more welcoming to the LGBT community. The Kansas order, less so. What did you make of them? Michael, what do you think?
Well, I had the opportunity to be with Governor Nixon when he signed his executive order.
Yeah.
And it was very exciting, and he was eloquent. And I just, if I could, I'd like to quote what the governor said upon signing.
Yeah.
A major victory for equality, and it's an important milestone in our journey towards creating a fair, more just society for all Americans.
Hmm.
That's impressive.
Okay. Kirk, what'd you think?
I also had the wonderful opportunity of being at the courthouse when Governor Nixon signed that order, and it was a very exciting thing to see. But one of the things that I thought that really struck out to me was he talked about the fact that there's still a lot of work to be done. He talked specifically about the just because everybody can now legally get married in the state of Missouri or all 50 states doesn't mean they're all not sorts of other protections that we need to take care of.
That's exactly what we're talking about here today. Stephanie, you're on the Kansas side of the state line. What did you think of Governor Brownback's executive order?
Well, it's extraordinarily sad that Governor Brownback doesn't understand that equality is constitutionally guaranteed in our United States Constitution, and that there's real human suffering that happens when people use religion as a mechanism of oppression and as a tool for discrimination.
So what did he say that concerns you the most?
His thought is really that somehow that his personal religious beliefs should be adopted by everybody in the entire state of Kansas, and probably he would think the whole country. But the idea that people who are lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender are somehow less than, that our love is less than, that we don't have equal citizenship standing and being able to experience some of those equal rights that Governor Nixon talked about.
Hey, how is the gay community responding to this? Is it a galvanizing force? Is it discouraging? How are people responding?
I think it's both, but I think that Equality Kansas, which is the statewide organization for political activism in LGBT rights in Kansas, has done a really good job.
Tom Witt leads that group. Yeah.
He's a great guy, and he's done a fabulous job of getting out information and making sure people understand what it was in the executive order that Governor Brownback issued. But there's still, I'm getting daily contact from people going, how horrible this is and all the things that it changes, when it doesn't change anything. It was already legal to discriminate, and it's still legal to discriminate.
Well, let's talk about the challenges that remain here that Kirk just referenced a minute ago. I mean, as Governor Nixon said, discrimination hasn't been eliminated. Do you all still face discrimination in your daily lives? Michael, how does it work for you?
Well, you know, I can't say that I'm daily discriminated, but that's not true for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think this conversation is it's true and it's exciting of what happened recently. But the truth is, we can get married now, but by noon we can be fired, and at night we can be evicted from our homes. So that tells me there's still a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
There are no protections for the LGBT community in federal employment law, and I think that's going to be the challenges ahead. And a diverse workforce is good for business.
Kirk, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I mean, specifically as it relates to healthcare, great progress with marriage. And somebody can legally get married and have all the protections that marriage affords, but yet there are still no protections that directly say a healthcare provider cannot discriminate against somebody just because they're LGBT.
I think the sense across the country, generally speaking, is that this fight's over now. Same-sex marriage has been won. We're done. Let's all go home and relax.
Right. And I think what's – and there is that, I think, sense of, oh, this is it. We've got full equality. And the reality is the work – there's a lot of work to be done. Getting back to the healthcare issue, you know, what Governor Brownback's order did is embolden – for instance, faith-based organizations that might be healthcare providers, mm-hmm. to openly discriminate and use that executive order as their protection to openly discriminate, for instance, about refusing to do treatment for a patient because they're LGBT. And that's a big concern. You know, personally, I'm dealing with that and seeing that in an issue today. A dear friend had a major healthcare crisis out of town, and his partner had to get to him quickly and had to make sure that he had all of the documents that show he has the legal durable power of attorney and healthcare covers. And you just see that firsthand at a personal level, and you realize all the protections that still have to happen just so that he can have the same right to make healthcare decisions for his partner as if they were a straight married couple.
You know, politically speaking, Stephanie, as you look at the road ahead, what's going to be the first big challenge? Is it going to be employment? Is it going to be housing? Where does the push go next? And where do you see Congress maybe taking all of this on in one big bite?
Well, I don't think it's going to come from the state of Kansas, anything where we're going to move forward as much as we're – but Inequality Kansas has done a fabulous job of stopping Brownback's administration from moving us backwards. But locally, I think you're going to see some efforts to do some things in employment and housing and public accommodations. And
I mean, say locally, meaning you're not going to go to the state capitol to fight this fight, maybe deal
with it.
We'll
be fighting that fight, but I think the change will happen locally.
City council level.
At the city council level.
Cities across the
state. We're going to be fighting on every front. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I think the greatest possible change right now is at the local level in Kansas, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nationally, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act is as long as Boehner's making decisions about what comes up in the House, it just can't move forward.
House Speaker John Boehner you're referring
correct.
To.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So at least for another couple of years, there's no possibility of it moving forward. And I'm not even sure after the next presidential election that we'll be in a position where it can come forward.
Michael, are you any more optimistic about federal changes or maybe not?
At this point, I am not.
That
doesn't mean we won't keep fighting. And mm-hmm. that doesn't mean this is this is just, think of all the people that have worked to get us to this point over the years, and I mean many, many years. And we have lots of work to do, but I think Stephanie was correct. The current environment in the national level of Congress.
You know, help me with that, Kirk, a little bit, because the momentum, it seems to me, again, politically is enormous right now in favor of full rights for everybody. Why are you all so discouraged, so downbeat about what might be happening in Washington?
Well, I think it's because I think there's a sense of victory from the recent marriage decision. And so I think there's this sense of it's all taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we can
fold up everything and go home. And so I think even though there's a phenomenal sea change for marriage, and I've never in my lifetime seen an issue change so quickly. When I think of the no on two amendment that Missouri did, that Michael and I both were a part of 10 years ago.
11 years ago.
2004, right?
2004.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how quickly minds have changed from the whole notion of people telling their stories. And I think that that is something that Governor Nixon said during his press conference on Monday was he said opposition to this issue keeps dying off because it tends to be something that with older Americans, they're the ones that have some of those views. And kids, they don't understand what this issue is. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that we will start to see some movement there. I do think, speaking to what we've been talking about, that at local levels, you're going to be more likely to see some more of the impact. I think in Missouri, the Missouri Non-Discrimination Act, I think people are, you know, it was very close in the past. I think one of those reasons is that at the time, Senator Jolie Justice was part of that chamber.
She's no longer there.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's no longer there.
Be a new member of the city council here.
She's now a member of the city council. But I've learned a lot from Jolie, and when she has a great line that she says, you know, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so I think it does instill the need to continue to have folks at the table when these conversations are happening. And that's why I'm encouraged that she's now has a voice on the city council.
Well, just so everyone understands then, so what is the big nut, the biggest hurdle that you want to overcome soon? Is it the employment? Is it the housing? What's the target here? Michael?
I would put them all in the same category of priority. Okay. I really would, because if we stop fighting on one, we'll lose, and we have to keep going.
And I get that, but what's the most important to the community, do you think?
Well, with my hat on from the Mid-America Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, employment protection. You know, there's no protection for the LGBT community in the federal employment law.
Right.
We are not a protected class. Laws that were enacted, such as, you know, federal laws like the 1964 Civil Rights protected a class of citizens. The aging law protects the older citizens. This marriage equality victory was great, but until the community has protected class status like race, religion, age, and gender at the national level, we have work to do.
And so the consequence of not having that, Stephanie, is what exactly? What's the worry? What can happen?
Everything can happen. You can be evicted from your home. You can lose your job. You can be denied health care. You meet with violence and discrimination. There's a great and you live in a world that's hopeless. I mean, 41% of transgender people attempt suicide in their lifetimes, mm-hmm. and there are some studies that show 50% up to 50% of transgender teenagers attempt suicide. Mm-hmm. That's because they're living in this world where there isn't any hope that they're going to be able to be who they are and love who they love, which is really all that we're asking for.
Yeah,
the telling of the stories is, I think, the thing that is really important. As we do that and people start to understand that this fight's not over, because there is that idea, I agree completely, that there is that idea that so many people come up to me and go, well, it's not legal to fire you from your job. And I'm, yeah, it's very legal to fire me from my job.
Just because
they just don't
of your
know.
Sexual orientation.
Because of my gender identity, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. And that idea needs to get out there. I'm not sure a lot of people grasp that idea.
You're absolutely right. Most people do not understand that it's still legal to fire somebody because of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
And that can happen anywhere in the country right now, or not.
No, there's a lot of states that protect it. I think there are 29 states where
it is a majority of states now.
There are 29 states where it's legal to fire somebody who's transgender, if just based on the fact of their gender identity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me get our listeners involved here. What added protections do you think that gay and lesbian citizens need under the law right now? Or do they? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Kirk, as you look at the menu of needed changes, what's your priority here?
I think some of the biggest priorities are just general equal protections. And it's, for instance, the marriage issue raises the question of, okay, yeah, now you're legally married, but what about all the protections that go along with that are still not in place? For instance, still can be discriminated for healthcare choices, still can be discriminated for employment, can still be discriminated for a myriad of things that actually going and getting married and having a public, for instance, publication of is a public confirmation that could raise some of these discrimination issues. I think as it relates to healthcare, for instance, at the Kansas City Care Clinic where I work, and which used to be the Kansas City Free Health Clinic, we see a lot of LGBT youth because Kansas City is this urban core with the surrounding rural area. And even though a lot of this progress has been made, the backlash to that is that there are some people that are still really angry about it. So we see kids at the clinic and we see youth that show up in Kansas City because they're still getting kicked out of their homes for being gay by mom and dad. They end up in Kansas City and there's not the support network that those kids need. Dr. Dietz, our medical director at the clinic,
How often do you see that?
We see patients like that every day, unfortunately.
That's breathtaking.
Dr. Dietz, our medical director at the clinic, said something stirring to me in a conversation that I was having with a panel conversation once years ago, where he said, He said, a lot of times, one of the best things I see is that these kids get HIV. And my jaw dropped. And I said, what do you mean? One of the best things that happens is these kids get HIV. And he said, because once they get access to HIV, they get access to a lot of resources. They get access to a social work case manager. They get access to some housing assistance. They get access to regular medical care. And he said, kids shouldn't need to get HIV in order to get that kind of support.
Because they're not getting that kind of support at home.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I mean, there's a wonderful network of support through the Ryan White Care System. And in Kansas City, we have an amazing network of providers that all come together to make sure people get into care and get the care they need. But that's for the kids who are HIV positive. What are we doing to make sure that we're offering that same kind of support and network for these kids who aren't yet HIV positive, getting them housing assistance, getting them access to a behavioral health specialist, that kind of thing.
You know, I began earlier on, I asked Michael if you all had experienced discrimination. I never got around the table. Do you experience discrimination in your daily lives today? Stephanie, do you?
Most of the discrimination that I experience is subtle. And it's just having to work harder in order to get from point A to point B, having to jump through hoops, having to register to vote. I have to sign an affidavit that says the reason why that my birth certificate doesn't match mine. I can't change my birth certificate in Kansas because of the Brownback administration, and I have to sign an affidavit just to register to vote. But I come from a place of privilege, and that I'm white and I'm educated and middle class, and so I have access to a lot of mm-hmm. opportunities that other people don't have access to, and so I can go find a job in spite of the fact that there's discrimination out there. It may not be as good a job, but I can still go find a job. For a lot of people who are mm-hmm. LGBT, that's just a life struggle to even be able to find a place to work.
Kirk, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I see it in little things where, as we mentioned earlier, the friend who's having the healthcare issues, it's that one extra little step that my partner and I, who, like Stephanie, we have a wealth of resources available to us, supportive family network, supportive system, and yet we still have to make sure that we have documents set up and in place so that if anything happens to either one of us, we can show up in a hospital and make sure that we're not denied access to mm-hmm. the emergency room for each other. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see it. And I mentioned every day at the clinic, I see these patients of ours that come in and, you know, they're wounded because of the experiences that they've had. The other thing that we haven't talked about is that it's coming out and the discrimination issues you focus within the LGBT community, it's a whole different world when you're talking. It is still something that's separated by a socioeconomic divide. It's harder to come out of the closet in rural communities, in lower income communities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, our brothers and sisters in the African American community face very different levels of discrimination about coming out. So we're having to realize that those are all the issues that we're still facing.
Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. The question on the table, what added protections do you think that gay and lesbian citizens need under the law right now? Again, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Charlotte from Olathe, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Charlotte.
Good. Well, I have a comment I'd like to make concerning the LGBT and gay communities. And I really am pleased to see the gains that have been made for them. I believe that until equal parity for gay and straights are achieved, we're going to see some issues develop, such as in employment. However, it's my opinion and my experience that when you're employed by a corporation, they have the right to fire you and not even tell you why they're firing you, whether it's gay, straight, or you've been taken too long for lunch or whatever it is. So in my opinion, creating a special category for the gay and straight community for protection from being fired is not viable. It gives that community special privileges over the rest of the community. And that's my opinion. However, I understand that that's a little bit of a stretch in today's environment, but I think when parity is achieved for both gay and straight communities, it will resolve itself.
Stephanie, you want to respond to that?
Well, I would begin by saying that the special privileges are those that are held now, right now, by all the protected classes based on disability, based on religion, based on race, based on ethnicity, national origin. All these things are protected classes, and they have privileges that the LGBT community does not have.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that those are the people who have the special privileges, and that the LGBT community is actually just hoping to accomplish a time in our lives where we can have the same protections that are already afforded to everybody else. But I would also comment on the right to work state thing. And yes, you can terminate somebody without telling them why, but there are lawsuits that happen in when somebody's fired because of the color of their skin, because there's enough evidence that shows that that's the reason why.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, then this is an issue that needs to be taken to court.
Well, you have to have something to take it to court against, and if there are no legal
right.
protections, then there's no way for you to take it to court, and that's mm-hmm. the reason why we need to have those protections.
Right, so,
well, I have no protections, but if they fired me because I took too long for lunch or I was unfairly fired from a position, and I could prove it, that I'd take it to court.
Charlotte, thank you. And I'm wondering, would a gay business owner be able to fire an employee for being straight?
I think that they'd be able to. I don't understand why they would, I don't see that same kind of. I don't know anybody who's gay who has a problem with people for being straight.
Yeah,
you know, or for being transgender. It's all one direction.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about future hurdles for the LGBT community. We'll talk about housing, talk a little bit more about employment, and we'll take your questions, too, at 816-235-2888. Later on this hour, Brian McTavish swings by with your weekend to-do list. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation with the man who retraced the Oregon Trail in a covered wagon, you can find that at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the show, we sit down with one of the key figures of Latino advocacy, the president and CEO of the National Council of La Raza. That's Janet Murguia. She is from Kansas City, Kansas. If you're just joining us this morning, we're talking about LGBT issues, the big challenges facing the community in the wake of the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage. We're visiting with Michael Linticum, Kirk Eisenhower, and Stephanie Mott. You know, Michael, you work with a lot of LGBT business owners. I'm wondering what kind of issues they face that are unique to that community.
Well, Steve, you know, I was talking with one of your producers yesterday about that same issue.
Yeah.
And from our standpoint and in the chamber and as executive director, literally, I have not ever had run into to prejudice towards a LGBT business.
Not at all.
They haven't been reported, and I am not aware of. But that doesn't mean, again, that it doesn't exist.
So what's the point of having, then, a gay and lesbian chamber of commerce? What's the point?
Well, just like any chamber, we're out to provide our members with good programming and education that they wouldn't find other places or at other chambers to help their businesses grow.
Mm-hmm.
We have monthly events and programs to bring folks together and to share best practices. And it's a wonderful energy feeling. We have about 60 to 65% of our chamber membership are straight allies.
Mm.
And the other...
A majority.
Oh, yes.
An easy majority.
Yeah. And it's just a wonderful supportive atmosphere when we all do get together on our monthly I see Kirk shaking his head over there.
I was just going to add, is the clinic is a member of the chamber, and one of the things we know with in healthcare is that the LGBT community feels, as long as there's cultural competence in the organization that they're getting healthcare from, that they just feel better if they know that their medical provider, their nurse, the staff are sensitive and open to LGBT issues. And I think that's what the chamber does, is it creates a network for the LGBT community to know that if I do have a business decision to make, if I needed a lawyer, if I need an accountant, if I need a gym to go to, businesses that identify as supporting the LGBTQ community, and that's a place you're going to go and have a good experience.
Is it your all sense, Michael, that Kansas City is more open to gay business owners than maybe other communities and cities across the country?
I want to say yes to that because as a member, we are a member of the National Association of Gay and Lesbian Chambers of Commerce. And at the national level, we are the 52nd member. We're one of the newest. We are 3 years old. But I go to our national conferences for the last 5 years, and I'm always so proud of our city and how supportive. If you just look at our membership roster, you will see major corporations, leaders, government officials who are members of our chamber who come and participate and support us. And we have a wonderful community here in Kansas City.
Other cities don't have that benefit.
Yes, and I share, when I share my story with my counterparts, other EDs across the country, and they shake their head that they wish that their environment was similar. But we are very blessed here.
You know, Stephanie, when you hear this buzzword that's being kicked around so much these days is diversity, and I'm wondering, what's the benefit to a business to have gay employees and a more diverse lineup of employees? What's your sense?
Well, diversity is very nature. It brings in people with different perspectives, different life experiences, different education, different monetary backgrounds. Everything is different. You bring in so many different new ideas and so many different perspectives and so many different solutions for the problems that your business is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Businesses are beginning to completely understand, I think, that for them to have a diverse workforce makes them a better business, makes them better able to serve their customers, makes them better able to produce their product, makes them better able to survive in the business climate. But they're also coming to understand that across the country, that the most creative employees are the ones who want to work in an inclusive space. Mm-hmm. And by not having an inclusive space in your business, there are a lot of people who won't come work for you, and some of those are the most creative people in the country.
You know, I'm also wondering about this idea of individuals, Michael, who aren't out at work yet. Mm-hmm. Is there still a sense of fear that coming out is going to affect their ability to navigate the workplace environment?
Oh, I think so, very much so. And I don't have any.
Sometimes I sit here and I think we're way down the road from that, but you're saying no.
No. That's sadly, we have not passed that. And I don't know how long it will be.
I think you see that a lot in the healthcare situation settings. We do a lot of teaching at the Kansas City Care Clinic. We have residents from several major universities and medical schools around town that come and do a rotation through the clinic. And we've been told by those schools that the students like the exposure they're getting to a much more diverse patient population, but we also are hearing that some of those medical students who are pharmacy students or nursing students are saying the clinic makes me feel like it's a safe place to come out as a medical provider and in the medical setting, and that we stop to realize that maybe in some of the large hospital systems that's still a scary thing.
Molly tweeted this with a question about housing, and she asked, is it more common for LGBT adults in Kansas City to be evicted from their homes and regulations rather than African-American adults? You're shaking your head no, Michael.
No, I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, you don't know? Anyone? Any idea?
It's my understanding that the city of Kansas City, Missouri, has a non-discrimination clause from a housing perspective, which does protect people from being evicted from a house because the property owner finds out that they're LGBTQ. But that's the city of Kansas City, Missouri proper. Mm-hmm. As we just saw recently last spring, I think, in the city of Roland Park, where they worked so hard to pass that clause so that so that people could not be evicted from a home or a rental property. There's still a lot of work to do within those different municipalities.
Yeah. Nikki posted this on Twitter, a reaction to my question about ranking the next obstacles for the LGBT community. Truly sad that we ask for a ranked list of which rights the LGBT community wants next, as if they can't expect all their rights.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're smiling, Stephanie.
Amen. That is great, a great comment, and absolutely factual that here we are talking about what thing that's being denied people.
Yeah.
What part of their human dignity are we going to think about maybe letting them have next?
Yeah.
So that's a wonderful comment.
Kirk Eisenhower, again, you're with the Kansas City Care Clinic. What sense of prejudice does the LGBT community feel when they seek health care these days? What are some of the issues on your plate?
Well, amazingly, with all the progress that has been done with HIV and treatment around HIV, there is still a stigma around people being infected with HIV. There are still all sorts of laws on the books where people can be discriminated against for not disclosing their HIV status to partners and things like that. It still amazes me the number of patients that when they do get a positive diagnosis, the shame that so many of them feel, even though we've made tremendous progress. And that tells me there's still a lot of work to be done to educate folks that you can live a very healthy life and live where you can manage the disease to an undetectable life and live a very long life. And yet, even with kids, they still have this fear of the disease. So that tells me that there's a lot of work. And that's just one of the things that I see on a regular basis.
So when they walk into the doctor's office, they face what kinds of issues these days? What are you seeing?
I think what you see is kids scared. Is if I tell my doctor about some of the, behavior I've related to as it relates to sexuality, is that going to be met with any kind of discrimination? Are they going to be okay with it? I think what we see...
Just raw fear.
Yeah, raw fear.
You don't know what kind of doctor you got in your hands there.
That's exactly right. We know that in the healthcare community, that the LGBT community feels comfortable if they know that the providers, meaning the nurses and the doctors, are not going to discriminate against them. We happen to see a lot of LGBT youth simply because we do a lot of HIV work at the clinic. So people make the correlation because we're an HIV-friendly clinic, we are an LGBT-friendly clinic, and we are. But Stephanie and I were talking before the show, we really see that as it translates to the trans community in the fact that, the progress that Caitlyn Jenner made recently has been great. She has put the face of this issue out there and really, I think, grown a lot of support. But she has a lot of resources available to her to seek the best endocrinologists, have the best treatment, have the best plastic surgery to make that transition very successful. A lot of folks don't have the access to those kinds of resources. And so, we see a lot of those patients who want to know that if I just come to the doctor for a doctor's appointment and I'm in the midst of a transition and I'm coming with something that is not related to my transition at all, but that I need to know that the provider I'm going to be working with, the nurse, the doctor, the medical assistant, is not going to discriminate against me.
So Stephanie, if a doctor is going to discriminate, what does that look like? Does it come in the form of I will not treat you, or is it more subtle than that, or what happens?
Sometimes it comes in the form of I will not treat you. There was a survey done by the National Center for Transgender Equality in 2010. And released in 2011, called "Injustice at Every Turn," and the statistics is 6,450 transgender and gender nonconforming people from the United States, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. 28% of transgender people in that survey have experienced harassment in medical settings.
28%,
and 15% have been turned away from medical care.
Turned away,
and 50%.
Isn't that a violation of their oaths? I don't understand.
And I know people who personally have been fired by their doctor when they came out as trans, which is it's a violation of their oath. It's against everything that they're supposed to stand for. Which is the same thing with any of these attempts to continue to discriminate against people based on religion or based on any other reason.
How does the trans community respond to that? Is there a list of doctors who are friendly and who are not? Is that what we're dealing with here?
There is not a complete list. There's something that I'm working on for K-STEP. And on our website now I have therapists in all the major cities in Kansas, and I'll be going into physicians, and after that, information about how to change the documents and a lot of different stuff like that. But there's not, and a lot of times it's just that I know somebody in a particular city who I can refer somebody to. When somebody calls me up and says, "Hey, I need to see a doctor in Lenexa, can you help me?" And I'm like, "Okay, yeah." And I point him to somebody.
Lenexa is one thing, but like Parsons is something else,
yeah,
right? Liberal Kansas.
Is hard, but I know people who live at least close to any place in Kansas.
Do you see people across the state driving 2 hours for certain treatments?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because they can't get it.
It's really common for people in Western Kansas to have to go all the way to Wichita to get the kind of treatment that they need.
Yeah. Yeah,
and even from like Colby or someplace, which is more than a two-hour drive.
You know, Kirk, I'm wondering about when it comes to HIV, you know, STI prevention and treatment, what kind of progress has been made? Because you get a sense we're in a better place these days.
Yeah, there's been a lot of progress made in reducing the spread, particularly in reducing the spread of HIV. There's a new treatment right now called PrEP therapy, and it's pre-exposure prophylactics, which you take an HIV medication called Truvada. You take it on a daily basis, and it helps reduce the risk of transmitting HIV by 99.97%.
Wow.
And so it was approved by the Centers for Disease Control a couple of years ago as a prevention treatment. It was originally designed to be a prevention treatment for partners of HIV-positive individuals. And they've realized there's such success with it that it is something that anybody, frankly, gay or straight, if they're sexually active, should think about getting on PrEP therapy. It's covered by most major insurance companies.
Yeah.
And for the patients that we have who don't have insurance, we've been able to get access through our patient assistance programs for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of some great progress that's been made, but there's still a lot of needing to get the word out about that treatment. We're seeing at the clinic for the first time a lot of people that may be LGBT and they're interested in this treatment. They have insurance, and they say, "Well, I know you guys probably do this better than anybody else. So can I come to you for a PrEP appointment?" And we have to educate them that, yeah, we used to be the Kansas City Free Health Clinic, but now we do take insurance, and yeah, you can get your care here.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I find extremely hopeful, kind of talking about some of the issues in healthcare, I went up to Chicago for a meeting a few months ago and got the opportunity to tour the Howard Brown Health Center, which is a large LGBT-focused health center in Chicago. And I was meeting with some of their folks there and found out that more than 40% of their population base identify as straight. And they are young people in Chicago who just live in the neighborhood or the close proximity of the Howard Brown Health Center, and they like the fact that they think it's kind of cool to go to the LGBT clinic.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
yeah.
So in my mind, that also gives me hope about some of the progress that we're making. And you know, my personal hope is that we can make that option in Kansas City can be the Kansas City Care Clinic.
And we just have a minute left here. Michael, I wanted to end maybe on a different note, this notion that we're having this conversation today in the wake of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage across the country. This all, as we've talked about before, has happened so quickly. Why? What happened to spark this wildfire, and what does it portend for the future?
Well, I don't know if I can put my finger on exactly what happened, but, you know, I think we've talked about what happened here in our state 11 years ago with the No On Two campaign.
Yeah.
And I can only talk to our local and statewide issues, and across the country I can't answer. But I think since that campaign and the conversations and the issues and the leaders that came forward during that campaign, we've started opening dialogue between businesses and the LGBT community.
Yeah.
And it just blossomed. And they 10 years ago or 11 years ago, I'd have never thought that we would be here this quickly.
I got to wrap here. Michael Lintikum, Executive Director of the Mid-America Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. Kirk Eisenhower with the Kansas City Care Clinic. Stephanie Mott, Executive Director of K-STEP. That's the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project. Thank you all for a great conversation. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks. Thank you, Steve.